Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. Today we're up to Book 14, Chapter 5. The rain had stopped, and only the mist was falling in drops from the trees. Denisov, the Esaul, and Petya rode silently, following the peasant in the knitted cap, who stepped lightly with outturned toes and moved noiselessly in his bast shoes over the roots and wet leaves, silently led them to the edge of the forest. He ascended an incline, stopped, looked around him, and advanced to where the screen of trees was less dense. On reaching a large oak tree that had not yet shed its leaves, he stopped and beckoned mysteriously to them with his hand. Denisov and Petya rode up to him. From the spot where the peasant was standing, they could see the French. Immediately beyond the forest, on a downward slope, lay a field of spring rye. To the right, beyond a steep ravine, was a small village and a landowner's house with a broken roof. In the village, in the house, in the garden, by the well, by the pond, over all the rising ground, and all along the road, uphill from the bridge leading to the village, not more than 500 yards away, crowds of men could be seen through the shimmering mist. Their un-Russian shouting at their horses, which were straining uphill with the carts, and their calls to one another could be clearly heard. "Bring the prisoner here," said Denisov in a low voice, not taking his eyes off the French. A Cossack dismounted, lifted the boy down, and took him to Denisov. Pointing to the French troops, Denisov asked him what these and those of them were. The boy, thrusting his cold hands into his pockets and lifting his eyebrows, looked at Denisov in affright, but in spite of an evident desire to say all he knew, gave confused answers, merely assenting to everything Denisov asked him. Denisov turned away from him, frowning, and addressed the Esaul, conveying his own conjectures to him. Petya, rapidly turning his head, looked now at the drummer boy, now at Denisov, now at the Esaul, and now at the French in the village and along the road, trying not to miss anything of importance. "Whether Dolokhov comes or not, we must seize it, eh?" said Denisov, with a merry sparkle in his eyes. "It is a very suitable spot," said the Esaul. "We'll send the infantry down by the swamps," Denisov continued. "They'll creep up into the garden. You'll wide up from there with the Cossacks." He pointed to a spot in the forest beyond the village, "and I with my hussars from here, and at the signal, shoot. The hollow is impassable." "There's a swamp there," said the Esaul. "The horses would sink. We must ride around more to the left." While they were talking in undertones, the crack of a shot sounded from the low ground by the pond. A puff of white smoke appeared, then another, and the sound of hundreds of seemingly merry French voices shouting together came up from the slopes. For a moment Denisov and the Esaul drew back. They were so near that they thought they were the cause of the firing and shouting. But the firing and shouting did not relate to them. Down below, a man, wearing something red, was running through the marsh. The French were evidently firing and shouting at him. "Why, that's our Tikhon," said the Esaul. "So it is, the wascal," said Denisov. "He'll get away," said Esaul, screwing up his eyes. The man, whom they called Tikhon, having run to the stream, plunged in so that the water splashed in the air, and having disappeared for an instant, scrambled out on all fours, all black with the wet, and ran on. The French, who had been pursuing him, stopped. "Smart, that," said the Esaul. "What a beast," said Denisov with his former look of vexation. "What has he been doing all this time?" "Who is he?" asked Petya. "He's our plaston. I sent him to capture a tongue." The footnote says that a plaston is an unmounted sharpshooter among the Black Sea Cossacks. "Oh, yes," said Petya, nodding at the first words Denisov uttered, as if he understood it all, though he really did not understand anything of it. Tikhon Shabbaty was one of the most indispensable men in their band. He was a peasant from Pokrovsk, near the river Gzart. When Denisov had come to Pokrovsk at the beginning of his operations, and had as usual summoned the village elder and asked him what he knew about the French, the elder, as though shielding himself, had replied, as all village elders did, that he had neither seen nor heard anything of them. But when Denisov explained that his purpose was to kill the French and asked if no French had strayed that way, the elder replied that some marauders had really been at their village, but that Tikhon Shabbaty was the only man who dealt with such matters. Denisov had Tikhon called, and having praised him for his activity, said a few words in the elder's presence about loyalty to the Tsar and the country, and the hatred of the French all sons of the fatherland should cherish. "We don't do the French any harm," said Tikhon, evidently frightened by Denisov's words. "We only fooled about with the lads for fun, you know. We killed a score or so of marauders, but we did no harm." Next day, when Denisov had left Provovsk, having quite forgotten about this peasant, it was reported to him that Tikhon had attached himself to their party and asked to be allowed to remain with it. Denisov gave orders to let him do so. Tikhon, who at first did rough work, laying campfires, fetching water, flaying dead horses, and so on, soon showed a great liking and aptitude for partisan warfare. At night he would go out for booty and always brought back French clothing and weapons, and when told to, he would bring in French captives also. Denisov then relieved him from drudgery and began taking him with him when he went out on expeditions and had him enrolled among the Cossacks. Tikhon did not like riding, and always went on foot, never lagging behind the cavalry. He was armed with a musketoon, which he carried rather as a joke, a pike, and an axe, which latter he used as a wolf uses its teeth, with equal ease picking fleas out of its fur or crunching thick bones. Tikhon, with equal accuracy, would split logs with blows at arm's length, or holding the head of the axe, would cut thin little pegs or carve spoons. In Denisov's party he held a peculiar and exceptional position. When anything particularly difficult or nasty had to be done, to push a cart out of the mud with one's shoulder, pull a horse out of a swamp by its tail, skin it, slink it among the French, or walk more than 30 miles in a day, everybody pointed laughingly at Tikhon. "It won't hurt that devil, he's as strong as a horse," they said of him. Once a Frenchman Tikhon was trying to capture fired a pistol at him and shot him in the fleshy part of the back. The wound, which Tikhon only treated with internal and external applications of vodka, was the subject of the liveliest jokes by the whole detachment, jokes in which Tikhon readily joined. "Hello, mate, never again. Gave you a twist," the Cossacks would banter him. And Tikhon, purposely writhing and making faces, pretended to be angry and swore at the French with the funniest curses. The only effect of this incident on Tikhon was that after being wounded he seldom brought in prisoners. He was the bravest and most useful man in the party. No one found more opportunities for attacking, no one captured or killed more Frenchmen, and consequently he was made the buffoon of all the Cossacks and Hussars and willingly accepted that role. Now he had been sent by Denisov overnight to Shamshevo to capture a tongue, but whether because he had not been content to take only one Frenchman or because he had slept through the night, he had crept by day into some bushes right among the French and, as Denisov had witnessed from above, had been detected by them. Alright, there we go, another chapter down. And hey, it turns out Tikhon is a bit of a badass. Doesn't it? That was almost like a different book for a bit there. It sounded like when, you know, in like Lord of the Rings, they're talking about why this guy is such a powerful warrior, and they kind of build up this like mythology around them. And Tikhon was like that. Like, he never rides his horse. He goes everywhere on foot. And he doesn't use his gun. He does everything melee style. And not with a sword. He uses an axe. It was quite cool. And he could use that axe brandished at arm's length or with great finesse, like carving a spoon or something like that. That gave him this almost mythological status. But then at the end of that chapter, he was detected by the French at very close range. And I don't think that's going to end too well for him. Did that mean he was killed? I'm not sure if that was the end of him or he just got detected and captured. But it didn't sound good. Turtle Vader asked, "Do you think the French prisoner is intentionally misleading Denisov or his confusion genuine?" I think it might be... convenient confusion. I think he might know more than he's letting on, and he's just trying to maintain plausible deniability in his... Well, I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's this. He's not saying anything incriminating about himself. Sorry, I'm distracted because there is a humongous daddy long leg spider walking across my desk. He's gigantic. Gosh. I would say it stretches from one end to the other 10 centimeters. Toe to toe. Ooh, alright. Stay over there, spider. What was I saying? Tikhon. Yes, Turtle Vader also asked, "Why does Tikhon passively accept all the jokes at his expense if he's the bravest and hardest working? Why do the others make fun of him if he's so clearly valuable as a comrade?" Yeah, that was a bit strange to me too. You'd think they'd have respect. I think it's more like ribbing, you know. I think they do have respect for him, but it's to the point where he's so ridiculously good that they have to make light of it in order to acknowledge it. I don't think they're really like trying to degrade him. I think they're just laughing about how great he is. That's what I'd like to think. But then they say he plays the buffoon and all these things. It's like he's a martyr. He just takes it all on. He doesn't mind. He does all the hard work, and then he comes back and his own army laughs at him. I'm not sure. I think this might be a translation thing where it's a bit lost. Yeah. About like the exact translation. It's lost on us because surely they can't be laughing at him even though he's the best in their army. And lastly, Turtle Vader said, "How will Tikhon's discovery affect Denisov's plan of attack?" Yeah, well, that's to be revealed, isn't it? I want to know the exact details of his discovery. You know, have they captured him? Have they killed him? What's going on? I suppose that'll probably be the next chapter or coming up soon. I've had a couple of people join us on the new subreddit, by the way. reddit.com/r/TheHemingwayList. Come on in. That's where we're going to be picking things up after this book. So I look forward to seeing you there. We're going to get all kinds of interesting flares going. It's a chance to sort of start a new community, which I think is really cool. Even though I completely love the A Year of War and Peace community on Reddit. But I don't know, it's just exciting. We can make our own banner art and all that kind of stuff. Should be fun. All right, thank you very much for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.